Hey folks, Heather Cox Richardson and Joanne Freeman here. Thank you for being members of the Cafe Insider community.
This is Backstage, a special segment of the Now and Then podcast exclusively for you. We hope you enjoy it. So, Heather, after all of that discussion of the mechanics and the realities of voting, the obvious thing I want to ask you about, and that the both of us can talk about, is our experiences of voting or being involved in the process and things, I guess, that particularly at early points in our adult lives that struck us and that still have some kind of impact. Do you have any sort of outstanding moments?
I do. And what's funny about that is somebody asked me this once before, and I told my children that somebody had asked this, and they all knew exactly what I said because it was such a big moment for me. My most important voting story is that I didn't vote. In 1980, which was the first year I was eligible to vote in a presidential election, I didn't vote because it never occurred to me that anybody would elect a former actor who was lying. I mean, if you read the newspapers, it was clear he was lying. And I was like, you know, this was cute, but really the American people want honesty, and they want real policies, and they want—
You had actual faith in what should happen.
And I remember sitting, it was obviously November, it was a hot night for November in Massachusetts. I was in college, and I was sitting, our dorm room had these giant windows, and one was open, and for some reason there was a desk, it was probably my desk, there was a desk by the window that had nothing on it, because, you know, I worked everywhere but at a desk. And I remember sitting on that desk with the window open because of how warm it was, and listening to people outside celebrating Ronald Reagan's election and being like, how did this happen? How did I so badly misjudge where the American people were in terms of our government? And I hadn't voted. So I had no right to complain. I hadn't voted because I thought, my vote doesn't matter. No one's going to elect this guy. And do you know, that was such a formative moment for me. I have never missed an election since. I've gotten out of sick beds to vote. I show up to every single election because it really, really matters. How about you?
I've been sitting here listening to you, and an early and big influence as far as my participation in voting is also the 1980 Reagan election. Because we're both the same age, and that actually makes sense that we both sort of hit an awareness moment at the same time. For me, it was a series of ahas. And the first one was Ronald Reagan came to my college to speechify in person. And they actually let us out of class so that we could go and listen and see what happened. It was a big crowd of people somewhere on the campus. And what surprised me is that before he came on, there was a group of singers on the stage, and they were singing Christian songs. And I'm Jewish. And I remember standing in the audience, and I gasped, right? Because it was like, some part of me was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What about this whole church and state thing? And why is religion coming into this? And why am I being, like, basically told that I don't count? And it stunned me. I mean, and in a sense, I suppose I feel now how naive I must have been then, but watching that be acted out on my college campus in 1980, it stunned the heck out of me. So then I decided, okay, I have to do something so that this guy doesn't win, because kind of like what you said, Heather, that's not how we're supposed to be. We're not supposed to be a nation that prioritizes one religion. So that guy's scary. So I came up with, and this is in line with some of what we were talking about today, I came up with this tricky maneuver. Like, I'm going to get my way through the system and have an impact. It's kind of almost the opposite of what you were thinking, Heather. So I decided I would not register as a Democrat and vote, because one little Democratic vote wouldn't matter. I would register as a Republican and vote for independent John Anderson, right? This would be brilliant. It would be a Republican vote that didn't go to Reagan. I felt that I was so clever, right? And I don't know why I thought my one vote counted that way and not another way, The downside of that is that I received Republican political literature for the entirety of the time that I lived in California because I was a registered Republican. But I love the fact that I thought I could gain the system. You and I were both, in one way or another, thinking about our votes and how they do or don't count. And we both had a kind of veil-raising moment in which we suddenly realized some hard truths about politics that it makes sense when we were on the ground engaged in the political process became apparent to us in a way that they hadn't been before.
Well, and just so you know, I was not at all political, obviously. I just sort of had I
was— Neither was I.
Yeah.
Neither was I.
I was like a folk and myth major, you know?
I was an English major.
It's a good major.
I'm not. I'm laughing because you are like me. I was an English major. I was not political at all. So that's true. That was an awakening of my political sensibilities too.
Well, and now again, so much has come clear since then. I mean, talk about hindsight being 2020. I remember there was that furor about Reagan launching his campaign or making that key campaign speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi. And I kept hearing, oh, well, you know, that's where three civil rights workers were killed. And they were always called civil rights workers. Mm. And I'm like, well, but they were killed everywhere. I mean, you know, I didn't really know what was going on. Like, why is that important? Now that I know that their great sin in Mississippi was to try and register people to vote. Oh my God, what a neon sign that was, that he chose to stand in that place and say, and he said this is a quote, "I believe in states' rights." I mean, that was at the time it was explained away, as we explained so many things away politically, saying, oh, he didn't mean that. Oh, you're exaggerating. Oh, this is not, you know, this isn't what you think it is. You know, these things that were excused as you marginalized people are overreacting, were really not just dog whistles, they were bullhorns.
Right.
I think maybe, and I hope it's not too late, we have recognized that these are not just dog whistles, that this is not something that can be explained away, and that we really are at a moment now where, unless we protect the right to vote, we are going straight back to the 1890s or the 1840s.
If that, but yeah, no, absolutely. And so I come away from this episode and from our stories thinking about two things. Number one, what happens on the ground matters. The reality of how things are being acted out, or the reality of how measures are likely to play out in reality, in person, matter a lot. So it's one thing to make pronouncements about purity. You have to think about how things play out on the ground. And for you and I, we had that experience of being in the moment and dealing with our votes and trying to figure out their impact. I think that matters. The second thing that I come away thinking about, and this really has to do more with the 1960s, is that one of the distinctive things about the 1960s was the group organization of it and the organized protest. That when people came together to say something about the fact that their voices were not being heard, a group of voices has a lot more impact than one single voice. So the power of protest, which I talk about all the time, also comes out to me from this episode. So, you know, I think thinking about the fact that your vote counts, that your vote is your voice, that if you're being prevented from voting or discouraged from voting, you are literally being silenced, and that civil protest, standing up to say, I want my voice to be heard, that can have an impact in one way or another. What we're talking about today is not just the working of democracy, but the survival of democracy.
But I'm going to have to add one more piece to that, and that's that it concerns me deeply that there has been and seems to be among a number of Democratic leaders the willingness to say, just register more people to vote. I mean, Stacey Abrams has done just a brilliant job in Georgia. Register more people to vote, and they'll be able to overcome obstacles. Okay, to a point. But until you get the messing around with the system out of the way, until you push back against the ability to pick your voters through state laws, through regulations, through stopping people from voting because you don't provide voting machines, for example, there is a limit to how much an individual can do. We need to have a fair system. And until we straighten
Precisely.
Out these new voting laws that are stopping people from voting, you know, it's not like African Americans in the South after 1870 said, oh, never mind, we don't care about voting. You know, they were still trying to vote. They were still showing up. In some places, they were able to vote until the early 20th century. But it didn't matter if the system was so skewed against them that they couldn't ever get a leg up. And that's what concerns me now.
I totally agree with you. And that's the thing, is that I think sometimes some people are not recognizing the degree to which the system itself can no longer be assumed to be functioning in the way that it should function, sort of how you and I, what we realized early in our adult lives, that if you're thinking that just signing people up is going to solve a problem, it will help dramatically. It's vitally important. But we need to also be focusing on the system itself, how it's working, and as I suggested a moment ago, how things are playing out on the ground, how they're being manipulated, and what we can do to move things to a more equitable level. Thank you for joining us backstage.
Be sure to write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. See you next time.